Thank you, Mr. Scriber. Actually, it's Grand Canyon Penitentiary.
No.
Shabbat Shalom. Happy Sabbath. It's great to be here. Mr. Erickson talked about church attendance, and we have been so pleased, so blessed to be so warmly welcomed over here. So thank you very much. A little bit more than 2 years ago, in late November 2012, Mr. Habila, who lived in northern Nigeria, was with his wife, who was pregnant, and their six-year-old son. And he heard a voice from outside telling him to come out. And he knew what that was for. So he went out, and there were four masked Boko Haram terrorists, each carrying an AK-47. They met him outside, and they asked him, "What's your religion?" Mr. Habila, without any hesitation, said, "I'm a Christian." And he said that he knew they were there to kill him. But he said, "I had submitted my life to God." They gave him a couple of chances to change his mind, to denounce Christianity. But he said no. And they went in the house, they talked to his wife, came back out, and they said, "Okay, we'll give you one last chance to recant." And he said, "No, I'm ready to die as a Christian." So he was on the ground, and one of them pointed one of the AK-47s at him, pulled the trigger. The bullet went in his nose, came out lower part of his jaw. He thought he was dead. His wife, his son, thought he was dead. The Boko Haram thugs, murderers, also thought he was dead. They stepped on him a couple times, shouted, "Allah Akbar, God is great," and then left, proceeded on to the next house. He was still alive. They found him that morning, and a neighbor drove him to the hospital, and he recovered. And he was interviewed, and I thought it was such a compelling interview, that's why I mention this particular incident, by Greta Van Susteren. And she asked him, she said, "Did you have any thought of reconsidering?" And he said, "We are already informed by Jesus in John 16 that they will kill us. Are you full of hate?" And he said, "I love them and I pray that God will open their minds one day." The Boko Haram people proceeded to the next house and that night killed 14 men. And she asked him, what do you think should be done? He said, "Well, what we will do, we Christians will pray that God's will be done in our lives. Let us die if that's your will. And we pray for the leaders that they'll make wise decisions so this murdering, this piecemeal Third World War, will be over. Please take up your song books." I'm not going to lead you in songs, but please take up your hymnals and look up number 133. "We are God's people." And let's look at the last line of the first stanza. And the music is from Brahms' Symphony Number 1. Don't worry, I won't try to sing it to you, otherwise the elders will run out of oil afterwards to anoint you for your pain in your ears. Okay. "Let us live transparently." I think that Mr. Habila, at least in this case, was transparent as a Christian. He was willing to die for his belief. He expected to die. I don't think he wanted to die, but he expected to die at that time. I believe in that case, certainly at least, he was transparent. One of the biggest problems with religion throughout the ages has been hypocrisy. People saying one thing, but being and doing something else. Let's look up, please come with me to Mark 12, and let's read verses 38 through 40. Jesus ripped, shredded the scribes and the Pharisees for their hypocrisy. Mark 12, 38. And in his teaching he said, "Beware of the scribes who desire to walk in long robes and to have salutations in the marketplaces and chief seats in the synagogues and chief places at the feasts. They that devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers, these shall receive greater condemnation," probably because they're so influential. Sometimes we have some gaps between how we really are and how we should be. So let's talk about how we can become more transparent. Because to really be close to God and to be good, genuine ambassadors for Jesus Christ, we should be living transparently. What they see really should be what they get. Transparent is basically the having the properties of transmitting light through something so that objects behind it or ahead of it, in front of it, can be distinctly seen. And of course, when something is apparent, capable of being easily perceived, understood, plain or clear. Some antonyms are hypocrisy, pretentiousness, being opaque or disingenuous. I don't know if you've ever bumped into a glass door. I have. You got to be careful because you're going to hurt yourself, and some of them are marked that, you know, there's a door here. But the glass at times can be so clear and so pristine that you don't know it's there. Now, sometimes you could maybe say, okay, say there's a person who wants to get to understand Jesus Christ better. And we all want to get to understand Jesus Christ better and live more like him. But say a person's just coming into the truth, reading about Christ, desiring to understand him, not his picture, what he looked like necessarily, but his character, how he was, how he spoke, how he conducted himself, how proactive he was, how he reacted to certain situations. And the person is moving toward Jesus Christ, and then you're there and bumps into you. So, wow. Maybe this is an inaccurate comparison, but bumps into you. So, oh, I didn't see you. Didn't know you were there. You were so much like Jesus Christ. How can we become more transparent? Let's ask ourselves five questions and answer them and see how we can learn about this particular way of describing our Christian journey in transparency. Last week, Mr. Remy encouraged us to take a real good, strong, hard look at ourselves in the mirror over the next few months so we can be ready for Passover. One of the questions I think that we can ask ourselves to learn more about ourselves, to become more transparent, is, are you keeping secrets from yourself that may be sabotaging your relationship with God? Let's go over to Acts, latter part of Acts chapter 24. Read about Paul's interaction with Felix. Paul was brought before Felix, and Felix gave him the chance to talk, to explain himself, his beliefs, what he really was about. Felix was the Roman governor of Judea, and he was known to be pretty cruel. But let's read in Acts 24, verse 22. "But when Felix heard these things, having more accurate knowledge of the way, he adjourned the proceedings and said, 'When Lysias, the commander, comes down, I will make a decision on your case.'" And then verse 24, "And after some days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was Jewish, he sent to Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ." Drusilla was the granddaughter of Herod the Great, who had tried to have Jesus killed when he was a baby. She was the great-niece of the Herod who had killed John the Baptist, and her father had James executed. Drusilla was the third wife of Felix. He had taken her away from a king in Syria to whom she was married. Let's read verse 25. Now as he reasoned about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix was afraid. And he wasn't just a little bit afraid. The explanation of that word is he was terrified. Paul was cutting to the chase. Paul really made sense. He was making way too much sense for Felix at that time. Felix was probably thinking about his immoral life, some of the things he had done, the divorces, some of the cruelty and so forth. He was probably shifting in his seat. Maybe his royal underwear was becoming increasingly tight. As Paul talked about righteousness, self-control, and judgment, what did Felix say? He said, "Go away for now. When I have a more convenient time, I will call for you." And he did call for him, but it's not recorded that Felix really made any positive changes from what Paul was saying. Are we keeping any secrets from ourselves? We all maybe have done that, probably have done that from time to time. Maybe we've erected certain defense mechanisms to avoid dealing with the real issues, some real issues. Self-justification, maybe some exceptions. God will understand. Maybe there's been some fear, some denial. This fellow with an unpronounceable French last name, François de la Rochefort, said, "We are all so used to disguising ourselves from others that we end up disguising ourselves from ourselves." And a woman, May Sutra, said, quote, We have to dare to be ourselves, however frightening or strange that self may prove to be." Of course, God knows all of our secrets. He's God. But what he wants us to be, of course, is true in our hearts, to himself, to ourselves, and of course, to his word. So we need to try to break down any particular barriers that we may have erected, either consciously or subconsciously, and deal with ourselves as we can. So what can we do to become more genuine, more authentic, more transparent? Strip away any kind of barriers, any kind of defense mechanisms that we may possibly have in place. Second question we can ask and answer is, does really our content reflect our description and our packaging? Let's go over to John, the first chapter, and read about Jesus and Nathanael. John 1, 47 through 49. Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said of him, "Behold, an Israelite, indeed, in whom is no deceit," or in the Authorized Version, "no guile." Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" Jesus answered and said to him, "Before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you." Nathanael answered and said to him, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Barnes' notes on the Bible says no guile means no deceit, no fraud, no hypocrisy. He is really what he professes to be. And then Ellicott's commentary says, quote, "The word for guile is the same word in the Authorized Version meaning subtlety, as in Genesis 27:35. Isaac is talking to Esau. Read that later, perhaps. "The thought then is, behold, the one who is true to the name of Israel, in whom there is nothing of the Jacob." Genesis 27:36. So Jacob was deceitful at first, but he made progress and he certainly became transparent. In advertising, the image, the packaging, and the description is so important. They want to convince us to buy their products, use their services. And sometimes we do. And maybe we do based on what they're saying. Do some research or whatever. And then sometimes we're very pleased. Other times we might be disappointed. People, is with people, is what people see with you really what they get? And with God, we have to make sure that we keep his second commandment, not take his name in vain and be something that's less than Christian. Is your inside like your outside? Is what you are the same as what you say you are? Third question. Do you address issues promptly? Let's go over again to Acts, a couple chapters after 24 and chapter 26, and read about Paul's interaction with Herod Agrippa II. Agrippa was the great-grandson of Herod the Great, and he was the son of Agrippa I. His father was eaten by worms, got so high and mighty that God struck him down. So if somebody hadn't heard that, maybe they ask Herod Agrippa II, how's your dad? Well, oh, he's been squirming around a lot lately. Anyway, let's read here in Acts 26. Let's read verses 27 and 28. Paul asked him straight up, King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you do believe. And I don't think Paul asked him that in a laid-back way. I think Paul was very passionate about that. This is what Paul was all about. Paul was so zealous. And he directly asked King Agrippa if he believed the prophets. And what did King Agrippa say? Then Agrippa said to Paul, you almost persuade me to become a Christian. Almost, but not quite. He postponed that. He put that off, like Felix. That's, of course, what we don't want to do. If we have issues, and we all do have issues, we want to never delay in eradicating anything that's inconsistent with God or his way of life. Let's look up a relevant verse here. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 2. Excuse me. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 2, please. Now is the accepted time. Now is the day of salvation. Judgment is on us today as we live, day in, day out. We shouldn't be postponing anything that needs to be addressed, anything we need to deal with. Herbert Lockyer, in his book, All the Men of the Bible, said, the two sworn enemies of the soul are yesterday and tomorrow. Another question, fourth question here we can ask ourselves related to transparency is, are we transparent in every aspect of our lives? Being totally 100% yielded, for me, has always been the biggest challenge of being in the church, of being trying to be a Christian. And we might envision sort of a transparency scale, shall we say. And here we have maybe pretentiousness on one side, on one end, and then transparency on the other. And of course, hopefully we're way over to the transparency side. What would Mr. Habila have said? What may his reaction possibly have been if the Boko Haram murderers would have said, okay, if you don't denounce your Christianity, I'm going to kill your wife and your son? Or what if they might have said, if you don't say you're not a Christian, change your mind, we're going to kill you, but we're going to kill you really slowly. you're going to die, but you're going to die in unimaginable pain. What would he have said? Well, we don't know. But he was certainly yielded. Let's talk about another Bible character, one who led a really active and vibrant and God-fearing life. And he was working with three well-known, famous monarchs, Nebuchadnezzar, Cyrus, and Darius, or Darius, however you pronounce it. Daniel. Let's go over to Daniel 1. Daniel displayed some transparent, wonderful, godly characteristics throughout his life. And one of them was self-control. Daniel 1, verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So he didn't eat or drink any of that. And then in chapter 10, go back a few chapters, chapter 10, verse 3, dealing with the 70 weeks prophecy, Daniel said, I ate no pleasant food, nor meat, no meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all, till the whole 3 weeks were fulfilled. Daniel was also courageous. Let's read a little bit about that in chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. 5, 22 and 23, please. So he's confronting Belshazzar about the writing on the wall. Handwriting on the wall. What does this mean? But you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all this. And you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. Directly he confronted Belshazzar. Daniel had also such consistent integrity. It's just really, really impressive. Let's read a little bit about that. Chapter 6, verse 3, please. Then Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit, that's verse 2, was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. He was really trustworthy. The governors, the other satraps, the other folks didn't like that. They didn't want to see Daniel over them. So what do? Try to cook something up. But they couldn't. They couldn't find anything on Daniel. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. Daniel was clean. Daniel lived a really good, godly life. Nobody was perfect except for Jesus Christ, but Daniel is a sterling example. So he gets thrown in the lion's den. King doesn't like that, but he had to stick with his particular the edict. Let's read verse 22. God protected him, of course. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Great integrity. Daniel certainly was a prayerful man. Maybe we won't read this right now, but before in chapter 2, 17 and 18, before he went to the king to explain the dream, the image dream that God had revealed to him, he and his three friends, Hananiah, Meshach, and Azariah, asked God, they beseeched God to help in that way. And then chapter 6, verse 13, so they answered and said before the king, that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show regard, due regard for you, O king, for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. Mr. Erickson talked about prayer. Daniel prayed faithfully, regularly, three times a day. Stayed close to God in that way. Sometimes if we think of our minds, we have rooms, we have some furniture. Sometimes we have to always allow God to arrange the furniture as he sees fit. It's not up to God's design. It's not up to our design, but it's up to our design. So we can ask ourselves, are we transparent in every single aspect of our lives or only in some, most? I think Paul was one of the most dynamic people probably in history. Before he was called as Saul, he was transparent. He shouldn't have been going after Christians, having them killed, put in prison, persecuting them. But then God got his attention, turned him around, and as Paul, it really seems to me, from what I read about Paul, is that he was transparent. He was really, what they got was what they saw. And Mr. McGee last week said, as we progress through life, we say, I have a long way to go, but God's with me. And it made me think of Mr. Armstrong, that he said something like, when I get older, when I've gotten older, now that I've progressed in life, I learn more and more about myself. And that's God showing him that. So we can ask ourselves also, is our behavior on a daily basis the same as we conduct ourselves on the Sabbath? Let's read in James 1, read verses 24. James 1, 23 and 24. If anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. We don't want to be like that. David said, don't have to look it up, I'll just read it to you, in Psalm 139:23, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. So we can ask ourselves, do I disagree with God in anything that he tells us to do? How long does it take me to be sorry when I sin? Aligned with what Mr. Erickson said, I think, about repentance. How long does it take me to call on God when I'm actually in trouble or I may be in trouble? So the final question about transparency today, and there are other questions too, but the final one today, are you basically the same with everybody? Let's read in Galatians 2 a few verses. Galatians 2, 11 through 15. About Peter and Paul. Basically, the book of Acts talks about Peter and Paul. Galatians 2, 11. Now, when Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to his face, because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy, opposite of transparency. But when I saw that there was no straightforward, that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter, before them all, if you, being a Jew, live in the manner of the Gentiles, and not as the Jews, why do you compel Gentiles to live as Jews? So Peter had a few problems early on initially, but he certainly became very, very transparent and died a martyr. Are we being transparent with others? Are we really being authentic about how we are? Are we really very, very concerned about impressions in social media? They talk about the good parts version, GPV, of ourselves for the world. People put forth the good parts version. And maybe, some may be overly concerned with impressions. Apostle Paul was certainly all things to all people, but never in compromising, never did he compromise God's law. We're accountable to God, certainly, not to others, and our worth is based on God's standards. Are we ourselves, no matter who we're with? So, in conclusion, Bible people, we read about all the many, many characters in the Bible and think about them, and some started out really positive and then went south. Maybe like Saul, King Saul. Some were a little bit shaky, but man, they finished up really well. They became very transparent. And some, like Daniel, were consistently right on, were consistently righteous. You know, all of us, I think, at some times have been maybe a little on the disingenuous side. Our transparency hasn't maybe always been what it should have been. But I found this quote, a man named George Eliot said, "It's never too late to be what you might have been." Living transparently is one way to look at our Christian journey. And we can consider Mr. Habila and how he was transparent, I believe, at that time in his life. So these particular transparency questions, with secrets, with our content being so important, our timing, are we transparent in every aspect, phase, facet of our lives, and are we transparent with basically everyone? So being candid with ourselves and identifying what we might possibly be doing and not living transparently and taking action on it is really going to be beneficial and help us in our relationship with God. If we indeed do live transparently, then our hope will indeed transpire.